Today is Wednesday, February 18th, 2026, and you're listening to the World Socialist Website. ICE targets Detroit by the Socialist Equality Party US. ICE activity is escalating sharply across the Detroit metropolitan area, marking a new stage in the Trump administration's nationwide rampage against democratic rights. On Monday morning, ICE carried out an operation outside of Factory Zero in Hamtramck, a heavily immigrant enclave of Detroit. Agents deployed from four unmarked vehicles, stopping motorists on the roadway and making arrests near the facility. The operation provoked shock and outrage among workers at the plant, who expressed class solidarity with their immigrant brothers and sisters. On February 2nd, a raid took place outside an Amazon facility in Hazel Park, where two Amazon Flex workers were arrested. Both men were asylum seekers with temporary protected status, but this did not stop ICE from seizing them in full view of workers inside the building. ICE is also reportedly purchasing warehouses in Romulus and Southfield. This is part of a $38 billion program to convert warehouse space across the country into makeshift detention centers. The scale of this buying spree shows that the Trump White House is preparing for mass arrest on the scale of hundreds of thousands of people. The year began with a rampage in Minneapolis, where ICE murdered two community members, Renee Good and Alex Preddy, and carried out violent attacks across the city, seizing immigrants, including children, who have been deported or sent to mass detention centers, in fact concentration camps, including the now notorious Dilley facility in Texas. Lessons must be drawn from the experience in Minneapolis, where tens of thousands of people demonstrated against the outrages of ICE. However, the events in Detroit and the broader nationwide buildup expose as fraud the claim by Democrats in the media that Trump is de-escalating. Immigration Gestapo agents and stormtroopers are not being withdrawn. They are being redeployed. The organization of opposition in this next stage requires a more organized and conscious approach, and one that mobilizes the vast power of the working class. The choice of Detroit as one of the next targets shows that the attack on immigrants is escalating into a terror campaign against the working class as a whole. Metro Detroit is a major industrial center of 4.4 million people and the historic heart of the U.S. auto industry. Nearly 250,000 manufacturing workers live in the region. The city has a rich history of class struggle, spanning more than a century, which lives in the memory of workers whose families have labored in the plants for generations. This includes historic battles against Henry Ford, a notorious anti-Semite and Nazi sympathizer. His legacy finds its parallel today in the support for Trump among today's oligarchs. The auto plants have diverse workforces spanning racial, ethnic, and national backgrounds. Detroit is home to one of the largest Middle Eastern immigrant communities in the country. Hamtramck, itself, is a deeply diverse working-class city, with residents whose ancestry spans from Bangladesh to Poland. Dearborn, home to Ford's headquarters and the Rogue Complex, has the highest concentration of Arab residents in the United States. This is what Trump is going to war against. An admirer of Hitler, he is aiming at nothing less than establishing a dictatorship in the United States. Trump acts and speaks not as an individual, but as a representative of the corporate and financial oligarchy, whose interests are incompatible with legal and democratic forms of rule. The massive expansion of ICE operations is closely connected to the 2026 elections, which the Trump administration intends to hold under the barrel of a gun, if they are held at all. The fundamental target of the dictatorship is the working class. The operations began at the Factory Zero and the Hazel Park Amazon facility, but agents will soon appear at factories and workplaces across the region, unless they're stopped. And it is the working class that must be organized in response, as in Minneapolis. There is deep hostility to Trump in the Detroit auto plants. During a visit to the Ford Road complex in Dearborn, auto worker Thomas T.J. Cibula made headlines when he angrily denounced Trump. He received widespread support after the company suspended him, leading to his reinstatement. Neighborhood groups have spontaneously begun to monitor and oppose ICE. Anger has already erupted at town hall meetings against the expansion of ICE operations in Michigan. High school students have staged walkouts at cities across southeast Michigan in recent weeks. The Socialist Equality Party and the World Socialist website propose the following as the basis for the fight against ICE, to be advanced at town hall meetings and other forums. First, the social force that must be mobilized is the working class, including auto workers, educators, healthcare workers, Amazon workers, postal workers, technology workers, and other sections of the working class. It is the working class that has the power to halt production and stop the operation of ICE and Trump's Gestapo agents. Second, workers in the United Auto Workers and other unions should demand mass meetings in every local to pass resolutions rejecting any collaboration with ICE agents, as Amazon did when it opened its doors for two Amazon Flex workers to be seized in the plant. Workers should prepare strike action in response to any effort to seize their co-workers, and the unions must be committed to the defense of workers and youth. The initiative, however, cannot be left in the hands of the union bureaucracy. In Minneapolis, the union apparatus worked consciously to prevent the strike action, insisting that workers had to remain on the job due to contractual technicalities. The UAW has said nothing about the Factory Zero raid, even though it took place only a few miles from its headquarters. It also said nothing about the mass layoffs at the plant, now down to one shift. UAW President Sean Fain warns that the right to strike is at stake and that there will be attacks on picket lines. Yet, he proposes no action to fight this, issuing only statements that commit the union to nothing. Therefore, third, to coordinate and organize opposition, rank-and-file committees should be organized in every factory and workplace, union and non-union, along with committees in every neighborhood and school. A network of rank-and-file neighborhood committees will create the framework for workers to monitor and respond rapidly when ICE attempts to abduct co-workers and family members. There is precedent for this. In 2020, at the start of the coronavirus pandemic, wildcat strikes broke out in Detroit that forced the shutdown of the auto industry across North America within hours. Action by auto workers against ICE would provide a lead and inspire confidence among workers across the United States. Fourth, the development of opposition must be connected to definite demands, including the removal of ICE from the city and state, and freedom for all those who have been detained. The logic of the struggle of workers and young people is toward a general strike, a logic which arose organically in the development of the struggle in Minneapolis. The development of a struggle in Detroit will become the impetus for a coordinated nationwide movement of the working class, raising the demands for the abolition of ICE, the immediate end to the persecution of immigrants, the release of all immigrants held in concentration camps, and the resignation and prosecution of all members of the Trump administration responsible for the violation of rights guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution. In this fight, no confidence can be placed in the Democratic Party, a party of Wall Street. It recently voted to temporarily extend funding to the Department of Homeland Security, and is presently abandoning even its toothless proposal to permanently defund DHS. In Minnesota, local Democrats are now collaborating with ICE and the Trump administration. The Democrats' main concern is not fascism, but the growth of opposition from below. The fight against ICE and Trump's dictatorship depends on the independent actions and initiative of workers themselves. workers and young people should be on guard for any provocations staged by ICE. Opposition should be developed through collective action and social struggle. Workers reading this or listening to this must begin laying the groundwork now. Organize groups in your workplaces and neighborhoods. Hold meetings to discuss and decide what must be done. The working class is the most powerful force on earth, once it knows how to use that power. The Socialist Equality Party US and the World Socialist website stand ready to assist all workers in building this movement. US murders 11 people with airstrikes on boats in both Caribbean and Pacific, by Andre Damon. The US military killed 11 people Monday in strikes on three boats in the Eastern Pacific and Caribbean Sea, in the deadliest single day so far this year of the Trump administration's killing spree off the Latin American coast. U.S. Southern Command announced that four men were killed on one boat in the Eastern Pacific, four on another in the Eastern Pacific, and three on a boat in the Caribbean. It was the first time the military bombed targets on both sides of the Panama Canal in the same day. The military posted a 39-second video showing the three boats being destroyed, one on the move, two sitting motionless in the water. No evidence was provided that the vessels were carrying drugs or that those killed had any connection to drug trafficking. The strikes are murders under international law. The men on these boats posed no imminent threat to anyone. They were not armed combatants. They were not engaged in hostilities. Under the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, the UN Charter, and the Pentagon's own Law of War Manual, killing them is a crime. UNCLOS, United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, Article 98, establishes a duty to rescue persons in distress at sea. The US media treated the strikes as entirely routine. ABC News ran a write-up of approximately 130 words. The Washington Post filed its report under National Security, not the front page. The killings did not receive even token condemnation from the Democratic Party. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Bernie Sanders, House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said nothing in response to the strikes. The strikes bring the total death toll to at least 145 people killed in 42 known strikes since early September 2025. Another 11 survivors of earlier strikes are presumed dead after the military left them to drown. Families of two Trinidadian fishermen killed in an October 14th strike have sued the U.S. government, calling the campaign, quote, "lawless killings in cold blood, killings for sport, and killings for theater," end quote. In October, UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Volker Türk called the strikes unacceptable, stating that, quote, "none of the individuals on the targeted boats appeared to pose an imminent threat to the lives of others," end quote. In November, former ICC Chief Prosecutor Luis Moreno Ocampo concluded that the strikes, quote, "likely constitute crimes against humanity," end quote. Representative Adam Smith, the top Democrat on the House Armed Services Committee, who viewed the classified video in December, described the scene. The men were, quote, "basically two shirtless people clinging to the bow of a capsized and inoperable boat, drifting in the water, until the missiles come and kill them," end quote. Killing survivors is a direct violation of the Hague Regulations prohibition on denying quarter, one of the oldest rules of warfare. An investigation by The Intercept, published Monday, revealed that when eight men jumped overboard during a December 30 triple strike, the Coast Guard took 45 hours to dispatch a rescue plane into 9-foot seas and 40-knot winds, where survival was measured in minutes. No survivors were found. Quote, Southcom doesn't want these people alive, a government official told The Intercept. The strikes take place in the context of a vast U.S. military campaign across the Western Hemisphere. In January, the USS Gerald R. Ford, the world's largest aircraft carrier, took part in the kidnapping of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro amid a massive bombardment of the Venezuelan capital of Caracas. The Trump administration's 2025 national security strategy declares, quote, a Trump corollary to the Monroe Doctrine, asserting that the United States will, quote, restore American preeminence in the Western Hemisphere and deny non-hemispheric competitors the ability to position forces or other threatening capabilities or to own or control strategically vital assets in our hemisphere, end quote. At the Munich Security Conference over the week, Secretary of State Marco Rubio delivered an open defense of imperialist criminality, quote, we cannot continue to allow those who blatantly and openly threaten our citizens and endanger our global stability to shield themselves behind abstractions of international law, end quote. He boasted that the old international order, quote, was unable to address the threat to our security from a narco-terrorist dictator in Venezuela, end quote. The position of the Trump administration that international law is an abstraction that the United States is not bound to observe. The Ford carrier strike group has now been redeployed from the Caribbean to the Middle East, where it will join the USS Abraham Lincoln strike group. Approximately 50,000 U.S. troops are deployed to the region. Reuters reported Friday that the Pentagon is planning, quote, sustained weeks-long operations against Iran. Trump told troops at Fort Bragg that regime change in Iran would be the best thing that could happen, end quote. The same carrier used to kidnap the president of Venezuela is being redeployed to wage war against a country of 88 million people. Some Democrats made verbal criticisms of earlier strikes. In November, Tim Kaine said the double tap, quote, rise to the level of a war crime. And in December, Himes called it a violation of the laws of war. But these criticisms have been completely dropped. War powers resolutions introduced by Kaine were defeated on party line votes. Ocasio-Cortez spoke at the Munich Security Conference last weekend and said nothing about the killing campaign or about the preparation for war against Iran. Instead, she accused Trump of insufficient aggression against Russia, called for reviving Obama's Trans-Pacific Partnership to confront China, and refused to rule out sending American troops to fight China over Taiwan. Despite the total criminality of the Trump administration's killing spree in the Caribbean, the Democrats have consistently voted to fund Trump's war machine. The $901 billion National Defense Authorization Act passed the House 312-112 in December, with 115 Democrats voting yes. In the Senate, it passed 77-20, with the vast majority of Senate Democrats voting in favor. Trump has called for a $1.5 trillion military budget for fiscal year 2027, the largest in American history. The Democrats have said nothing to oppose it. They supplied the votes to pass the spending bill that funds the ongoing killing spree in the Caribbean, and every warship now sailing toward Iran. Sick 2-month-old baby deported after falling ill in South Texas ICE concentration camp, by Jacob Cross. The U.S. government has deported a critically ill 2-month-old baby after releasing him from the hospital and returning him to a South Texas Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, concentration camp. As of Tuesday evening, federal authorities had still refused to confirm whether Juan Nicolás was alive, deported, transferred, or dead. However, Univision reported Lida Terrazas posted on social media that Nicolás was deported, quote, along with his mother and the rest of the family, end quote. Terrazas reported that she spoke over the phone with Juan's mother, who said they were practically abandoned at the border and that the baby is still sick, end quote. Nicolas, who has spent nearly half of his life imprisoned at the Dilley Family Detention Center in Texas, was recently hospitalized after becoming unresponsive while suffering from bronchitis, according to his mother. Texas Congressman Joaquin Castro reported Tuesday morning that Juan's mother was brought before an immigration judge and told she would be deported, without being informed when or where. Castro said she and her infant son were returned to Dilley, after which their whereabouts became unknown. In an interview Tuesday afternoon with Pablo Manriquez of Migrant Insider, Castro said that neither her nor his staff had been able to obtain basic information from ICE. Quote, "Right now and for the last several hours, I cannot tell you where he is," Castro said. He explained that Juan's mother missed scheduled appointments to speak with family members and legal contacts. Quote, "We have not gotten a straight answer from ICE about where exactly he and his mom are," Castro said. Terrazas reported that the baby, quote, "is still sick. They were left there with the money they had left in their commissary, and someone actually gave them a phone in the street, and that's how she was able to call me," end quote. Terrazas said Juan's mother was in distress and panicking. They were sent to the same place they fled from, end quote. There's no doubt that the U.S. government purposely preemptively discharged and deported Juan in order to avoid providing him proper medical care after forcing him and his family to languish in a disease-ridden concentration camp. In his interview with Migrant Insider, Castro warned that seriously ill detainees often become, quote, "a hot potato for the system," and that ICE is attempting to evade responsibility for the infant's medical care. The lack of transparency has fueled grave concerns, including the possibility that Juan's condition worsened while in federal custody. Describing conditions in the detention center, attorney Eric Lee, who represents other families at Dilley, told MS Now Sunday, quote, "We live in a country where the federal government kidnaps children, spirits them away to what are really concentration camps hundreds of miles from home," end quote. He said that prisoners were held for months at a time in, quote, "disease-infested conditions," unquote, without adequate food, clean water, or medical care. Last month, two cases of measles were identified at the same Dilley detention center where Juan Nicolas became sick. Separately, El Paso city officials and U.S. Representative Veronica Escobar confirmed that two cases of tuberculosis and 19 cases of COVID-19 were identified at Camp East Montana, a 5,000-bed tent facility built last year on the Fort Bliss Army base. Approximately 3,100 people are currently imprisoned on the army base. The deportation of sick Juan Nicolas and his family comes the day after the Federal Bureau of Investigations, the FBI, formally notified the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, the BCA, that it will not share evidence or allow access to case files related to the murder investigation of Alex Preddy. 3 weeks ago, Preddy, a Minneapolis ICU nurse, was executed by Customs and Border Protection CBP thugs Jesus Ochoa and Raymond Gutierrez. As of this writing, neither Ochoa, Gutierrez, nor Jonathan Ross, the ICE agent that murdered Renee Good, has been charged with a crime. BCA Superintendent Drew Evans called the FBI's refusal to share information, quote, "concerning and unprecedented." While state investigators are being stonewalled in efforts to secure basic evidence in the killings of Preddy and Good, federal authorities are simultaneously moving forward with plans to dramatically expand the concentration camp network under ICE. Internal government documents released in recent days detail plans to construct a network of long-term mega-centers capable of holding tens of thousands of people at any given time. These facilities are explicitly designed for sustained mass detention, which will sharply increase the risk of disease, medical neglect, and death. The United States already operates a sprawling for-profit detention system that imprisons more than 55,000 people on any given day, with tens of thousands more cycling through its camps annually. The expansion now underway is aimed at normalizing mass incarceration without due process or a trial. These camps are not being built to detain the worst of the worst, as claimed by the Trump administration. They are being constructed to imprison workers, immigrants, and political opponents of the financial oligarchy. The real worst of the worst are not detained in Dilley or El Paso, but are in Washington, where officials are advancing illegal plans to bomb Iran, continuing the genocide in Gaza, and backing the annexation of the West Bank. The same ruling elite that wages imperialist war abroad is building concentration camps at home. The Democratic Party is just as responsible for these crimes as the Republicans. As negotiations continue to reopen the Department of Homeland Security, the DHS, and restore its funding, Democrats have abandoned even nominal demands that ICE comply with the Constitution and obtain judicial warrants before entering private property. According to reporting by CBS News, Senate Democrats have narrowed their demands to a short list of procedural measures, including restrictions on roving patrols, a use of force code, and requirements that ICE agents wear body cameras and remove masks. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer described these proposals as common sense. Under conditions in which a majority of self-identified Democrats and a plurality of independents support abolishing ICE and prosecuting those responsible for the thousands of crimes and abuses carried out by the immigration police since Trump's return to the White House, the Democratic Party has dropped any demands that would halt ICE raids, dismantle the detention camp network, or impede Trump's drive to concentrate unchecked executive power. Even figures such as Representative Castro, who has reported grave crimes committed by ICE, offer no alternative path forward. Asked by Pablo Manriquez what people should do in response to the inhumane treatment of Juan Nicolás and thousands of other immigrants, Castro urged the public to reach out to members of Congress. The same Congress that has overseen the bipartisan expansion of ICE, approved its budget year after year, and funded imperialist wars across the globe. The refusal of the Democratic Party to oppose ICE terror is not a failure of courage or political will, but a conscious decision rooted in class interest. The Democrats and Republicans defend the same capitalist system, the same corporate and financial oligarchy that is driven toward dictatorship in order to preserve its unearned wealth through attacks on the working class. The disappearance of Juan Nicolás underscores that the defense of immigrants, democratic rights, and human life itself cannot be entrusted to Congress, the courts, or any faction of the political establishment. You can find all this and more at the World Socialist website, WSWS.org. This has been Archie Stone for the World Socialist website.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.